The Honorable, the Judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit.
Good afternoon. Mr. Hawkins, we're happy to hear from you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court, I am Richard Hawkins. I am here on behalf of the appellant, Sheila Holmes, and we are here appealing the district court's decision granting summary judgment to the appellee on her ADA claim. I'd like to begin by thanking the court for granting oral argument, and in particular, granting it telephonically. I have a face made for radio, and so I certainly appreciate appearing in this manner. All kidding aside, Your Honors, we are here appealing an ADA claim judgment, and there are three issues that are before the court on appeal. The first two issues are essentially mirror images of each other. And that is whether or not genuine issues of material fact exist as to whether or not a steel-toe shoe requirement is an essential function for Ms. Holmes's job. And then at the same time, the second issue is whether or not genuine issues of material fact exist as to whether or not a reasonable accommodation is available to Ms. Holmes to exclude her or to exempt her from wearing steel-toe shoes in her job. And then the third issue, more of a procedural point, but nevertheless important, which is whether or not the district court abused its discretion in striking the declaration of Arlene Bland as part of the summary judgment record. Now, before I go through all of the points I want to get into as to those issues, I want to emphasize to the court what this case is not and what the facts of this case do not show. They do not show that between 2002 and 2013, which are the relevant time frames here. The 2002 is when General Dynamics took over the facility with Ms. Holmes, and 2013 is when they told Ms. Holmes for the first time that she could not be exempt from the steel-toe shoe requirement. I want to emphasize that in that time frame, there were no new laws enacted. There were no certifications created. There were no regulations promulgated that created for General Dynamics or anyone else in this facility a previously unknown safety requirement or legal obligation. The law that's in place is OSHA. It was enacted in 1970. The CFR regulation that was in place here and that's governing the PPE was 1974. The record reflects that there are certain kinds of private certifications. There is what's called the ISO 14001, which is a voluntary environmental regulation. The record doesn't reflect this, but you can take judicial notice to know that that regulation came into effect in 1996, well before the time period in question. And the same is true for what the record calls an OHSAS 18001, which is a British regulation that came into place in 1999. And the same is also true for company rules and company procedures. The 30B6 representative for General Dynamics at JA 293 testified that even as far back as 1998 and continuously, without exception, all the way through that time period, General Dynamics had always had a steel-toe shoe safety policy requirement. And so it's important to emphasize that at least contextually, there's nothing outside, there's no outside forces, there's nothing independent of the workplace itself that caused any obligations to be created that didn't already otherwise exist in this time frame. I think the record reflects also, undisputedly, that in this same time frame, Ms. Holmes, she never had this function essential to her. The record reflects, of course, that Ms. Holmes suffers from a BRCA metatarsia. Say that fast three times. Which is a congenital deformity or congenital disease that caused her to have deformed feet and cause ulcerations on her toes when she wears these steel-toed shoes or when she tried to wear these steel-toed shoes. And she also suffers from diabetes, which causes her circulation problems. And I think kind of the best example or best evidence of what kinds of problems that Ms. Holmes faces with these conditions is when she testified in her deposition about this. And this is at JA 84, 85, 86, and 87. And in those pages, she said, "I'm a diabetic. I will not have sores on my feet because it can cause me to have my foot removed. You know, I had previously had this BRCA metatarsus when diabetes got diagnosis. In her very, I think, casual and telling word, she said it put another kinker into it. You cannot have sores, you cannot have blisters or open wounds or anything. You will lose your feet. And those facts are undisputed. And it is against the record, against that background, that we have a competing narrative. We have, on the one hand, issues of safety compliance and policies and rules, and on the other hand, you have an unbroken period of 11 years where Ms. Holmes did not wear or was not required to wear these so-called safety shoes. And so on these facts and on this record, a jury could reasonably conclude at least one of two things favorable to Ms. Holmes. The first is that if there was a safety policy at General Dynamics, it was safety in name only. It wasn't on the ground, sort of a de facto versus a de jure policy. They say it on the one hand in writing, but when it gets down to the people on the ground, that's not how it's applied. Or, and this is just as reasonable, there's a safety policy at General Dynamics, but it is flexible for people such as Ms. Holmes, who have a medically justifiable basis for not having to comply with this particular policy. And we believe the district court erred in failing to recognize that the record evidence allowed for this conclusion. And in fact, we believe the record reflects that the district court, who is a fantastic district court judge, and I have the greatest of respect for him, but we believe the district court engaged in improper weighing of the facts as well as speculation about facts that weren't even in the record. And I point the court to JA 571, which is part of the district court's opinion, where the district court talks about the undisputed facts show that General Dynamics had legitimate business reasons for requiring Holmes to wear safety shoes. Exempting her from this requirement could have jeopardized its certification and standing in various organizations and agencies. And the record doesn't reflect that. The record reflects that for those persons for whom there was no medical justification, for whom wearing steel-toed shoes was an inconvenience, then that might have jeopardized a certification, but not as to the situation at bar. Yes,
Mr. Hawkins, this is Judge Keenan. I'm concerned about how we would write an opinion in your favor in this case, because wouldn't we be required to say that an employer must allow an employee to continue a job that creates a safety risk for that employee? In other words, you seem to be suggesting there's an estoppel principle at work here, that just because General Dynamics did nothing for 11 years, it can't do something now. And I'm very concerned that with regard to safety, I don't see how we can say in the context of an ADA claim that an employer is required to allow an unsafe practice if that unsafe practice is required for the employee to maintain their job.
Your Honor, that's an excellent question, and that is the headwind that I've been against the entire time in this case, and I think it is extremely valid to ask and to focus on that. My response is that when talking about safety, when talking about an employer's decision to say, all right, this is our policy, in this context, and I would ask the court in focusing on that question to look at the unique factual context that's before this court on this record, it isn't just that there is an 11-year record of one behavior and then a switch. It's what that 11-year behavior signifies. It's what is properly inferred based on that 11-year behavior. It can't be that safety is such an important or overriding concern as to this requirement if it hasn't been enforced or hasn't been allowed to be enforced as to Ms. Holmes under these conditions. And I point the court as well to the regulations or the interpretive guidance on OSHA that we provided, which allow for a balancing of safety considerations, safety of the employee versus safety issues for the company, and say that requiring PPE to be worn is not a hard and fast rule where the wearing of that PPE would in fact create a hazard for the employee. And that regulation, it doesn't on all fours with this case address that issue, but what it does do is it shows that it is not a situation where this court has to choose between blessing an unsafe practice or saying that something is an unsafe practice versus saying that something is an accommodation or something is an essential function. It's our position that any concerns about safety have already been reduced, if not eliminated, by the court's by General Dynamics' behavior over an 11-year period. And what I would
Mr.
say,
Mr. Hawkins.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hawkins, this is Judge Motz. So I'm appreciate your argument because it looked in your brief as if you were eschewing all safety standards. But is this a correct statement of your argument, that your client has set forth an ADA claim because she has alleged facts supporting her contention that with reasonable accommodation, she could perform the essential functions of her job while complying with the employer's genuine safety requirements?
That is our position.
Is that
yes.
your contention?
Okay. It is our contention.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
And I apologize if my brief was a little bit too focused on Ms. Holmes versus safety considerations. I don't discount those, and I certainly don't underemphasize those. But I do think that in this particular fact situation, arguments about safety and argument about compliance of certifications and those sorts of things are best stated to the jury, particularly because the record reflects that. Despite saying these things were so important, the company did not even call OSHA or did not even inquire as to whether or not there were any kind of I won't say escape valves, but I'll say ways to accommodate Ms. Holmes under these circumstances. And I do think it's important to emphasize that she worked for 11 years without concerns about safety. And it's not an estoppel issue per se, but what it does show, at least in our opinion, is that it does show that there is a genuine dispute of fact as to whether or not this safety rule really does apply in this particular context. What we are not saying, and I want to be very clear about this, we are not saying that General Dynamics has no obligation to enforce safety rules, and we are not saying that anyone and everyone who has ever, quote, gotten away with or been able to hide the fact that they were not wearing safety shoes is now somehow free and clear. That is not what we are saying. We are saying this is a situation where Ms. Holmes, and I do think the record is clear on this, she wasn't simply trying to disguise the fact that she wasn't wearing safety shoes. For many years, what happened is somebody would come around and they would say, do you have to wear safety shoes? And she would show her doctor's note. And that is a perfectly reasonable thing to do under these circumstances. And we invite the court to review the case we cited in our Rule 28J letter, the Katoska case, which says that if an employee has performed a job for several years without having to perform that essential function and has been successful, then it doesn't really look like an essential function. And I realize that we have the nuance of safety, and that is kind of the overlay here. But I don't think that rule is any different. I think that rule is consistent with this court's opinion in Jacobs, and I think it's consistent with the CFR regulations that refer to the past practices of the incumbent employee when asking whether or not something is or is not an essential function. So we understand that there have been some, quote, areas of lax enforcement, but those situations don't change what we're saying here, at least on this particular record.
Mr. Hawkins, this is Judge Keenan again.
Yes, ma'am.
I think there has been at least possibly some confusion as to whether we're dealing with an essential job function here or a qualification standard to perform the job. And if this is a qualification standard rather than an essential function, what impact, if any, does that have on our review of the case?
Well, to me, that makes it even easier because she's qualified for the job.
No, but a standard, in other words, you can't do the job unless you wear the shoes, as opposed to wearing the shoes being a function of the job. Is there a difference in the analysis there or not?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, and factually, it's true. I think you can perform the job without wearing the shoe. That's the extra concern is that of safety. It isn't one of those things that you have to be able to do. Like it's not a lifting of a heavy drill or the lifting of heavy items for purposes of your job.
It's not a job function then.
Well, that's what we contend.
It's a safety standard.
Correct.
As opposed to a job function.
That is correct. And as we've said, we believe that we are compliant with that. I will also say, or that it's a reasonable jury could conclude that we're compliant with that. The last thing I'll say on this particular point before I leave for rebuttal is that this is not a direct evidence case, at least not at this time on this record, nor is it a business necessity case. This is a simple qualification. Do we meet the basic threshold elements for the ADA? And so in talking about things like direct threats or safety, those are the burden of the defendant, the appellee, and those can be addressed, if at all, later down the road at trial. So we ask that the district court's decision be reversed, and we ask that the court recognize the genuine issues of material fact exist. Thank you.
Okay. We're happy to hear from the other side.
Yeah, good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mike Murphy here on behalf of General Dynamics. Let me just begin by taking issue with a comment the opposing counsel just made, that there's a nuance of safety at issue, only a nuance in this case. Tennis shoes are not a reasonable accommodation for the workplace hazards that Ms. Holmes faced in the shelter production area of the plant. As the record describes, this production area contains equipment, drills, which would have bits on them, as well as the materials themselves that could crush a person's foot. That, in fact, is not in dispute. Ms. Holmes' lawyer before the trial judge at Joint Appendix 539 admitted that there were these kinds of workplace hazards in the shelter fabrication area in the plant. It's not reasonable to have an employee working in that area in tennis shoes. In fact, the compliance with this OSHA standard and the safety standard is set forth in the briefs. It's very clear. It says employers are to ensure that each affected employee uses protective footwear when working in areas where there is a danger of foot injuries. There is no dispute that the hazards in this working area present a danger of foot injuries. Now, the company, as the record describes, was not fully compliant in enforcing this safety standard as to Ms. Holmes. That is not in dispute. But it's never too late for a company to take corrective action and get into full compliance. And what happened in June of 2013 is they had an outside safety auditor come in as part of the certifications that Ms. Holmes's counsel identified to come in and evaluate the safety procedures in the plant. And during that audit, they discovered that somebody, not Ms. Holmes, but another employee, was working in the shelter fabrication area and not wearing safety shoes. That triggered a write-up. And if there was another violation like that, that would result in a major infraction and the company would be in jeopardy of losing those certifications, which are necessary to do business with the federal government, especially DOD. So in response to that discovery, they decided it's not too late to take corrective action and to get into full compliance. As the record describes, the word went out, there were meetings with the supervisors that we are not making any exceptions anymore, including with respect to Ms. Holmes, that we were going to come into full compliance. And as part of that process, they engaged in an interactive process with Ms. Holmes, trying to find alternative safety footwear that would also accommodate her particular medical situation as well as the hazards in the workplace. This was not just insisting that she wear steel-toed shoes. There were efforts, as were described, to come up with other alternatives that had composite materials that would protect her feet from serious injury. In fact, the company indicated, and it's borne out in the record, that she actually could go and come up with custom-made shoes and the company would pay for it. So while counsel for Ms. Holmes is saying there's a nuance of safety, I would argue that safety was paramount. And in fact, the EEOC has issued guidance, and it's actually addressed in one of the cases that we cited, which is the Labaceo versus Broward County case, which actually involved an individual who also had diabetes, who had difficulty, who was unable to wear the steel-toed safety shoes. He took the position in the case that he should be able to wear sneakers. And the court analyzed how do you reconcile the need for honoring the OSHA mandate to protect feet from foot injuries while at the same time addressing the obligations under the ADA to deal with reasonable accommodation. And the court discussed this EEOC guidance, and in the EEOC guidance, there's actually a fact pattern that's very similar to the fact pattern that's before the court. And it's discussed in footnote 6 of the opinion, but let me just, if I can, just tell you what the EEOC's guidance is. It's example 45. I'm just going to read it in full. An employer, pursuant to an OSHA regulation, requires employees to wear steel-toed boots. An employee has severe burns on his feet and legs that prevent him from wearing these types of boots. No accommodation is possible, and so he asks for an exemption. The ADA does not prevent employers from complying with other federal laws, including the Occupational Safety and Health Act, which requires employees working in certain jobs, industries, or positions to wear particular items of clothing or protective gear. Under these circumstances, the employer may insist that the employee wear steel-toe boots, and because the employee cannot comply with this rule, he is not qualified. General Dynamics did not just insist that she wear steel-toe boots. As I indicated, they tried to come up with alternatives over almost a two-year period. During that two-year period, as the record reflects, they tried to find alternatives that would work. It wasn't simply steel-toed boots. Your Honor, with respect to the obligation to comply, the company, in fact, was trying to do a better job of it. There's no dispute about it, but it was an essential requirement of the job that this individual wear some protective footwear. The OSHA guidance that is cited in the briefs and discussed does not dictate a different result. The guidance does not say if there's a hazard, you can simply throw up your hands and just say, we're going to agree to any and all accommodations, even if the accommodation does not protect the individual's foot. In fact, the guidance talks about the interactive process, which is what the company did, in fact, do here. So from our point of view, Your Honor, there is no jury question, because compliance with this OSHA standard is not optional, it is mandatory. And while it is true that there was noncompliance with respect to Ms. Holmes for a significant period of time, as I've indicated before, it's never too late to take corrective action and get into full compliance. And finally, Your Honor, with respect to the issue of the sanctions, which I'm anticipating that counsel will address, we maintain that the court, district court, clearly weighed the evidence and concluded that the appropriate sanction in this particular instance was striking the late identified declarant. The omission was not substantially justified. The omission was not harmless. And as the cases say, the parties are not to engage in trial by ambush. There was an obligation on the part of counsel for Ms. Holmes to indicate, to disclose sooner with respect to the initial disclosures as well as to the interrogatory answers that Ms. Bland was actually a fact witness that would rebut the company's statement that they were enforcing this particular OSHA safety policy. And on that, Your Honors, I will rest on our brief.
Thank you very much. Do we have any rebuttal? Counsel? Mr. Hawkins, are you still there?
I am. Thank you, Your Honor. I have just a very brief rebuttal. The first thing I would do is I will refer to the case that my friend on the other side just referenced, the Labaceo case. And what I would say is What you don't have in that case is an issue of whether or not there was a past practice, which is central to our entire argument here. And it's also relevant to the issue of whether or not safety is in fact, or compliance with the safety obligation is in fact something that cannot be exempted or something that cannot be adjusted. I believe on this record, and I've looked at other cases, the parties have cited cases to the court, I have not found any case where you have more than a decade's worth of practice that all of a sudden gets upended in order to quote, strictly comply with an obligation for which the company should have been strictly complying from the very beginning. And it's not to say that you can't do that. I'm not saying that a company can never change its mind. But in this particular situation, there, again, as we've stated at the opening, nothing changed. Absolutely nothing changed. The audit that they focus on didn't focus on an employee like Ms. Holmes who had a medical condition. It focused on somebody who was flouting the policy and had continuously flouted the policy and didn't want to follow the policy as general as a matter of convenience. That is not the situation we have here. And we don't have a situation, as the example from counsel pointed out in the EEOC guidance with the Burns, where it is a choice between not being able to perform a job and not complying with a safety procedure. We have a situation where we have a past practice that evidences, and I think this is very important, it evidences that Ms. Holmes has been safely performing this job for more than a decade. And so when you talk about safety concerns now, it falls on a little bit of a deaf ear, and I think, and at this point, it certainly defeats the argument, at least at the summary judgment stage, that counsel is able, or that the party here should be granted judgment as a matter of law as to essential functions and as to reasonable accommodation. Following the Supreme Court's lead in Tolan v. Cotton from about 6 years ago, to paraphrase the Supreme Court, we believe that by weighing the evidence and reaching factual inferences contrary to the plaintiff's competent evidence, the court below neglected to adhere to the fundamental principle that at the summary judgment stage, reasonable inferences should be drawn in favor of the non-moving party.
Okay, Mr. Hawkins?
Yes,
Mr. Hawkins, this is Judge Keenan. Again, let's make you the author of the opinion of the court in your favor. In writing the opinion, what are you going to say regarding why the OSHA requirement doesn't matter in this case? Why the OSHA requirement doesn't supersede all other considerations? And anything other than estoppel, because you've agreed that estoppel doesn't apply and past practices doesn't apply. What are you going to say in the opinion as to why the OSHA requirement isn't determinative here in terms of General Dynamics' right to rely on the OSHA requirement to demonstrate a business necessity, like the Bates case and the Exxon case in the other circuits?
Certainly. What I would say is that I would say that OSHA has the out, and we have cited to the court, we cited to the district court, the guidance, the interpretive guidance that says you are not required to choose between one hazard or another when it comes to PPE. The other hazard here, which is not speculative, it's not ethereal, it is a concrete hazard to Ms. Holmes to have damage done to her circulatory system, her appendages, her feet, and you've seen the pictures. What we have here is a plaintiff, an appellant who has the ability or has the hazard choice that OSHA allows. OSHA allows for this kind of a choice, one versus safety, one hazard versus another hazard. And in this, and again, it's fact specific. And
so you're saying that is the employee's choice then? Is that where you're coming down on? Sounds like it.
Well, I'm saying that you can't discount the employee's hazard in those circumstances. In this particular situation, the OSHA regulation allows for a flexible decision-making process. And I guess to respond directly to your question, Your Honor, in this particular instance and on this record, which is important, there was no question. I mean, they did a lot of interactive process about the type of shoe to be worn, but there was never any inquiry as to whether or not this regulation allowed for the flexibility that we, one, contend it does, and two, believe the facts support. And so on this record, that flexibility was never inquired into by General Dynamics, and that would have been the way to defend against a past practice of 11 years in the other direction. So with that said, Your Honors, I will rest on the briefs as to the motion to strike, and unless the court has any other questions, I would ask that the court reverse the district court and find at a minimum that material issues of disputed fact exist as to essential functions and reasonable accommodation.
Thank you. Thank you both. The case is submitted. We'll ask our clerk to adjourn court.